Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. From the Arizona Republic, no green thumb, no big problem, from Samantha Mangino. Succulents are a popular houseplant thanks to their trendy looks and superb resiliency. This low-maintenance greenery survives even if you have the opposite of a green thumb. But don't neglect succulents because even they require tending. Sonia Query, a master gardener and marketing director at Love Plants, an online gardening store, shares her best tips on how to care for succulents. These plants teach us the value of patience and the beauty of slow growth, says Query. With the right recipe of water and light, your home can be full of prosperous succulents. What plants are succulents? The name succulent comes from succus and means juice or sap, a reference to the thickened leaves characteristic of succulents that store water. The thick, supple cellular walls of these plants makes them drought resistant as they can live off the stored water in their leaves. Succulents are widely available and are a budget-friendly pick. But of all the beautiful houseplants out there, which ones are succulents? Here are some of the most popular options. Echeveria. This is a classic succulent with a floral look. The thick green leaves of an echeveria look like a blooming lotus, but come in many colors and shapes. Echeveria garrado. This rosette-shaped succulent looks adorable tucked on a windowsill. $48 at the sill. Cactus. Cactuses are members of the succulent family and have thick stems covered in prickly spines. They grow best in sunlight with minimal watering. While large cactuses are better suited for planting outdoors, smaller versions make great houseplants. Cuddly cactus. This cactus is all the beauty of a cactus without the prickly spine. $68 at the sill. Jade plants. Reaching gorgeous vertical heights, jade plants grow into miniature trees that live in your home. Make sure to select a pot that is wide and fairly deep, as these top-heavy plants can reach up to 6 feet tall. Despite their grand looks, these plants are a breeze to maintain. Jade plants do best in warm, dry environments with partial to full sun exposure. In need of a low-maintenance plant, the Sunset Jade does best with infrequent watering. $48 at the sill. Aloe vera. What's better than a houseplant with healing properties? The tentacle-like leaves of aloe vera plants contain a medicinal gel that's soothing on burns and cuts. Aloe vera plants do best with ample sunlight, so make sure to place this plant in a south or west-facing window. Water your aloe plant roughly once a week or when the soil is dry. Costa Farms Aloe Vera. Get a sunburn? Break off an aloe leaf for some sweet relief. $14 at Home Depot. How to care for succulents. Succulents don't require much attention, but they still need TLC. The right amount of light, water, and soil makes the formula for a succulent's proper care. Light. Many succulents flourish in bright, indirect sunlight, Query says. Even if you don't have a spot in your home that brings in rays of sunlight, if a room still gets bright during the day, that will be enough for succulents. Most succulent varieties do well with indirect light, but cactuses thrive with direct sunlight. Water. While you might be used to plants drying out after weeks of forgetting to water them, it's the opposite problem with succulents. While most of your plants should be on a weekly watering schedule, succulents should go weeks at a time. When it comes to how to care for succulents, Query suggests watering every 2 to 4 weeks. In the winter, you should go even longer. She advises the soil should be bone dry before watering again. And it's not just the top level of soil that should be dry. Make sure to stick a finger an inch or two into the soil to verify that everything has dried out before going in with your watering can. Homarden Copper Watering Can. The thin nose of this watering can get in between the petals of your favorite succulents. $35 at Amazon. Soil. If you buy a pre-potted succulent, then you might not think to repot it. This should be fine in most cases. However, if you notice your succulent withering despite getting the right amount of water and soil, it's time to look at the soil. A well-draining, sandy, or gritty soil mix provides the ideal home for these plants, says Query. While swapping out the soil, make sure your pot includes a drainage hole. Pooling water leads to root rot. Miracle-Grow Succulent Potting Mix. This specialized soil lets succulents thrive. $13 at Amazon. From the Sun Lake Splash, Melon Mania, the fruit that will make you lose your rind, by Ann Danahy. With her mouth-watering flavors and a rainbow of colors, melons can make the warmer months even sweeter. Most melons are fat-free and naturally low in sugar, with only 10 to 15 grams and about 50 calories per cup. They are high in vitamin C, potassium, fiber, and antioxidants. Red or pink melons contain lycopene, which is linked with a lower rate of prostate cancer and heart disease. Orange melons are rich in beta-carotene, which is vital for eye health. Melons are about 90% water plus electrolytes, so they're a tasty way to stay hydrated. Watermelon, cantaloupe, also known as muskmelon, and golden honeydew are familiar favorites. Floral, fruity cantaloupe slices complement salty prosciutto, manchego cheese, and pistachios on a charcuterie board. Golden honeydew melons have a bright golden rind and velvety pale green flesh that's firm but juicy with a delicate honeyed flavor. Dice and toss it with red pepper, pineapple, jalapeno, and cilantro for a refreshing fruit salsa to serve atop grilled chicken or fish. Melons are also great for grilling. Give them a quick sear for a succulent side dish. Stock up on all shapes and sizes of watermelon to serve in everything from salads to desserts. Watermelon's sugary flavor pairs well with salty feta cheese and fresh basil for an easy salad. And watermelons are perfect for dessert pizza. Cut them crosswise into round slices and then into wedges to resemble pizza slices. Top slices with Greek yogurt and fresh berries for a bright, healthy treat. Choose firm melons that feel heavy for their size and are free from cracks or bruises. For the ripest watermelon, look for a yellow spot on one side where it sat on the ground to ripen in the sun. Once it's been cut, refrigerate your melon and eat it within 4 days. If you find yourself with excess melon, puree the flesh and freeze it into ice cube trays. Use the cubes in smoothies, agua fresca, or a refreshing granita. Now that you're juiced about these tasty fruits, chill out with all of them this season. From the Arizona Republic, 10 Tips for Your Flower Garden from a Star Horticulturalist by Jackie Runnis. Walking into a plant nursery can be overwhelming, especially when you want a stunning flower garden at home. Before the planting season begins, look for guidance from experts. We tapped Steve Foltz, Director of Horticulture at the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden, for help with flower garden ideas and tips. He's been with the Horticulture Department since 1988, taught university-level courses in horticulture for 3 decades, and is a member of the Kentucky Nursery and Landscape Hall of Fame. He knows his stuff. We ask the important questions and Foltz answers. Want your flower garden to resemble those at Zoo Blooms, the annual event held at the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden, also voted the best flower festival in the USA Today 10 Best Reader's Choice Awards? You're in the right place. How do you arrange a flower garden? Like most things, your best bet is to keep it simple. Foltz says to use drifts of color in your home flower garden and to use the most color in high traffic areas like walkways, patios, and decks. Keep in mind that annuals require care and even the hardiest need to be watered and fertilized, so your flower bed should be near water outlets. What flowers are best for a flower garden? For a colorful flower garden with mad curb appeal, Foltz suggests the following easy-to-grow blooms, whether you plant them directly in the ground or in containers. Best for sunny areas in your flower garden. Petunia. Choose bright colors like Vista Bubblegum Pink or Supertunia Vista Jazzberry. Lantana. Good choices include Citrus Blend and Lucky Pot of Gold. Sweet Potato Vine. Marguerite is a great ground cover in sunny spots. It cascades over walls and is a vigorous grower. Zinnias. Zahara Fire is a low plant with bright orange flowers, or try any in the Profusion Zinnias series. Salvia. Mystic Spires Blue is a terrific pollinator plant, or go for the Big Blue and Blue Suede Shoes varieties. Grass, purple fountain grass, is super easy. Best for shady areas in your flower garden. Impatiens. Foltz especially likes the Sun Patience Compact Electric Orange. Begonias. Dragon Wing Series, Megawatt Series, and Surefire Cherry Cordial are Foltz's favorites. Coleus. Foltz likes the vegetative varieties like the Color Blaze Series or the Main Street Series. Should you plant seeds or use potted plants for a flower garden? Foltz suggests visiting your local garden store that sells well-grown annuals that are either in flats or 4-inch pots. Most of the time, the vigorous plants that do well are in 4-inch pots, he adds. Growing from seed can be fun in the back of the garden, but when you are really counting on color, buy plants. So how do you prepare the soil before planting flowers? Soil prep for a flower garden starts with knowing the soil type that's native to your area. You may have to apply some elbow grease to get the dirt in good enough shape to plant annuals. The most important tip is to dig up your soil with a shovel or a small rototiller to make sure it's loose and soft, Foltz explains. Try for 6 to 8 inches deep, and if you can't dig with your hands, the soil is not ready. If you have to chip away at the soil to plant your flowers, you are in for an uphill battle in which you will not win. Consider a soil test kit, $10 to $20, to determine your soil's composition, alkalinity, and acidity. Foltz says if you're working your dirt and adding organic matter occasionally when preparing your beds, you should be in good shape. So how often do you need to water and fertilize a flower garden? Assuming you adequately prepared your soil, water your flower garden immediately after planting and keep an eye on it for the next week or so. The first week, we fertilize with a liquid feed you can attach to your hose, like Miracle-Gro or something similar, the horticulturalist advises, and you can use slow-release fertilizer as a top dress as well. Then it is a matter of making sure the color of your leaves stays good and dark green. Once the annuals are established, water 2 times a week. If it rains, you may still need to water it because sometimes it doesn't soak the ground. If you're unsure, stick your finger in the soil at the base of the plant and feel if it is wet or dry. How do you extend the blooming season of a flower garden? By using the recommended plants from our trials at the Botanical Gardens, Foltz says, we expect our annuals to look good from May to the first frost. If they are short season color, they don't get the zoo's best annuals moniker. For more flower garden ideas, check out the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Gardens Guide to Planting Your Garden. How to prevent common pests that affect flowers. If you've done all the above, selected the best recommended plants, prepared your soil, watered and fertilized your annuals, being extra attentive the first 3 weeks, you should be good. Deer, however, can be your thorniest issue if you have them in the neighborhood. If they don't bother your hostas or lilies, you're probably safe. If they eat your hostas, Foltz suggests adding plants like lantana, salvia, and verbena to keep deer at bay. When it comes to controlling weeds, forget about using fabric, plastic, or rocks. Cover your soil with mulch, but with annuals, don't lay it on too thick. Foltz uses pine-based mulch, which is very fine in texture. He notes that well-regarded garden stores and nurseries generally use this mix to grow their perennials. How do you plant a wildflower garden? Wildflowers are a vital support system for butterflies, birds, and bees, and are a beautiful addition to your flower garden. Butterflies need host plants and nectar plants that will feed them later. If you want to see monarchs, for example, Foltz suggests using milkweed as the host plant. For swallowtail butterflies, plant pipevine, spice bush, and fennel. Annuals like lantana, salvia, and verbena make great nectar plants for the butterflies to feed on. How do you make a container flower garden? Container gardens are a snap to grow, and the larger the container, the easier it is to maintain. Always use a soilless mix in containers, according to Foltz. See your best garden centers that display a lot of beautiful annual color containers and use their mix, he says. It will be more important to use slow-release fertilizer or fertilize more often when growing in containers. Note that you will have to water more frequently when container gardening. What are some edible plants to include in a flower garden? Kale, chard, and peppery nasturtium bring a lot of color to gardens. Chives are a hardy perennial plant that adds edible leaves and flowers, and they're easy, deer-proof, and attractive. Nothing is better than homegrown strawberries, which grow well in containers, or raspberries and blackberries planted in wilder places where they can ramble. Also from the Arizona Republic, Hummingbirds Brighten Spring in Arizona by Tiffany Acosta. Did you know that Arizona is the hummingbird capital of the United States? With over a dozen species found in the state, including the Anna's hummingbird, the Costa's hummingbird, and the broad-billed hummingbird, Arizona provides a vital habitat for these tiny, iridescent flyers. They are particularly attracted to the state's varied landscapes, from desert scrublands to mountainous pine forests, where they find abundant nectar sources from flowering plants, including agave, ocotillo, and penstemon. Hummingbirds are important pollinators, contributing to the ecological health and biodiversity of Arizona's ecosystems. Spring and fall are hummingbird migration seasons, and with some species returning to Arizona now, you're probably seeing more of them. Here's everything to know about hummingbird migration. What months do hummingbirds migrate? Hummingbird migration dates vary depending on the species and their breeding range. In North America, many hummingbirds migrate to and from their breeding grounds in response to changes in daylight and food availability. Generally, hummingbirds start their northward migration in late winter or early spring, typically from February to May, depending on the region and species, according to the National Audubon Society. In the fall, hummingbirds begin their southward migration to warmer climates for the winter. Fall migration typically occurs from August to October, again depending on the species and region. But not all hummingbirds migrate. Some species, like the Anna's hummingbird that's common in Arizona, are non-migratory and remain in their breeding territories year-round. Do hummingbirds stay in Arizona all year long? Some hummingbird species are present in Arizona year-round, while others are migratory and only visit during certain seasons. The Anna's hummingbird is one of the species that can be found in Arizona throughout the year. It is a resident species and does not migrate long distances. Anna's hummingbirds are commonly found in urban and suburban areas, as well as desert and chaparral habitats where they can find out suitable food sources year-round. Other species, such as the black-chinned hummingbird and the Costa's hummingbird, are migratory and may only be present in Arizona during certain times of the year. These species typically arrive in Arizona for the breeding season in spring and summer and may migrate to warmer climates in Mexico or Central America during the winter months. Do hummingbirds return to the same place every year? Many hummingbird species exhibit site fidelity, meaning they return to the same places each year. This behavior is particularly common among species that have established successful breeding sites with abundant food sources and suitable nesting sites. However, the extent of site fidelity can vary among individual birds and species. Some hummingbirds may return to the same nesting site year after year, while others may return to the general area, but not necessarily the same specific location, according to the National Audubon Society. What is the best time to see hummingbirds in Arizona? Hummingbirds can typically be seen in Arizona from late February through early September, and the peak season for hummingbird activity in Arizona is from late spring to early summer, roughly April through June, according to the Southeastern Arizona Bird Observatory. During this time, the weather is warm and flowers are in bloom, providing ample food. Early mornings and late afternoons tend to be the most active times for hummingbirds. What brings hummingbirds to your yard? Attracting hummingbirds to your yard requires providing them with food, water, shelter, and nesting sites. Here are some tips from the National Audubon Society to attract hummingbirds to your yard. Plant native flowering plants. Hummingbirds are attracted to brightly colored tubular flowers rich in nectar. Plant a variety of native flowers such as salvia, penstemon, trumpet vine, and honeysuckle. Choose plants that bloom at different times throughout the year to provide a continuous nectar source. Use hummingbird feeders. Hang hummingbird feeders filled with a nectar solution, a mixture of water and white granulated sugar, in your yard. Place feeders in visible locations and clean them regularly to prevent mold and bacteria growth. Avoid using red food coloring or artificial sweeteners in the nectar solution. provide water. Hummingbirds need water for drinking and bathing. Create shallow bird baths or misters to provide them with a water source. Clean and refill water sources regularly to keep them fresh. And avoid pesticides. Minimize or eliminate the use of pesticides and herbicides in your yard as they can harm hummingbirds and beneficial insects. What kind of hummingbirds live in Arizona? Arizona is home to several species of hummingbirds, both resident species and migratory. Here are some of the hummingbird species found in Arizona, according to the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. Anna's hummingbird. This is a medium-sized hummingbird with iridescent green feathers on its back and head. It's often found in urban and suburban areas, as well as desert and chaparral habitats throughout Arizona. Black-chinned hummingbird. Black-chinned hummingbirds are small, with metallic green upperparts and white underparts. During migration season in Arizona, those hummingbirds can be observed in a variety of habitats, including desert scrub and riparian areas. Costa's hummingbird. Costa's hummingbirds are small with iridescent green upperparts and a distinctive violet-purple crown on the male's head. During the breeding season, Costa's hummingbirds can be found in desert habitats, particularly areas with blooming ocotillo and other flowering plants. Broad-billed hummingbird. These hummingbirds are medium-sized with iridescent green upperparts and a vibrant red bill, which is broader and more curved than that of other hummingbird species. Rufous hummingbird. Rufous hummingbirds are small with reddish-brown upperparts and an orange-red throat that extends onto the upper breast. Rufous hummingbirds are highly migratory and pass through Arizona during their northward migration in the spring and southward migration in the fall, often visiting gardens and wooded areas along their route. What time of day do hummingbirds come out? Hummingbirds are typically most active during daylight hours, especially during the early morning and late afternoon, according to the National Audubon Society. These times coincide with peak nectar availability. Early morning is often a particularly active time for hummingbirds as they replenish their energy reserves after a night of fasting. They may engage in feeding, territorial displays, and courtship behaviors during this time. Late afternoon is another active period for hummingbirds as they continue to forage for nectar before sunset. Hummingbirds are less active during the hottest part of the day, particularly in warmer climates, when they seek shade or rest to conserve energy. And what is the hummingbird capital of Arizona? According to Visit USA Parks, Sierra Vista, Arizona is recognized as the hummingbird capital of the United States, thanks to its location near the Huachuca Mountains and its diverse habitats, which provide ideal conditions for a variety of hummingbird species. Sierra Vista hosts events such as the Southwest Wings Birding and Nature Festival, offering opportunities for bird watchers to observe numerous hummingbird species. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know that we feature stories each week from the terrific book called Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This story is called God's Mountain Garden. It was written by Bertha M. Sutliff, and there is a quote here, a Chinese proverb, "Keep a green tree in your heart, and perhaps the singing bird will come." God's Mountain Garden. I grew up on a farm in the mountains of northwest Arkansas. As children, my brother and I roamed every inch of the little mountain facing my parents' house. We knew where every giant boulder and animal burrow was on that little piece of mountain bordering my dad's farm. One day, my grandpa came to visit from his home several miles away. We sat on the front porch swing looking at the mountain, and he began to tell me his story. It was a delightful tale about him and me living in a little cabin on the mountain. "Can you see it?" he asked. "It's right there by that big acorn tree. See it?" Of course I saw it. What 8-year-old child wouldn't see what her imagination wanted her to see? "We're going to live in that cabin. We'll catch a wild cow for our milk and pick wild strawberries for our supper," Grandpa continued. "I bet the squirrels will bring us nuts to eat. We'll search the bushes for wild chickens and turkeys. The chickens will give us eggs, and will cook us a turkey over the big old fireplace. Yep, we'll do that someday." From that day on, every time I saw my grandpa, I asked when we could go to live in the little log cabin on the mountain. And then he'd once more spin the story of how the two of us would live in the cabin with the wildflowers and wild animals around us. Time raced on. I grew into my teens and gradually forgot Grandpa's story. After graduating high school, I still saw Grandpa and loved him dearly, but not like that little girl did. I grew out of the fantasy of the log cabin and wild cows. Before long, I married and set up my own house. One day, the phone rang. When I heard my daddy's sorrowful voice, I knew my grandpa had left us. He had been in his garden behind his house and died there, his heart forever stopped. I grieved alongside my mother for my dear grandpa, remembering his promises of the cabin in the woods with all its animals and flowers. It seemed I could once again hear his voice telling me the fantasy we shared. I felt my childhood memories being buried with him. Less than a year later, I went to visit my parents' farm. Mama and I sat on the front porch, admiring the green foliage of the mountain. It had been 10 months since Grandpa had passed away, but the longing to hear his voice one more time was still fresh in my soul. I told Mama about the story Grandpa had always told me of the cabin in the woods, the wild cow, the chickens, and turkey. "Mama," I said after I'd finished my story, "would you mind if I went for a walk by myself?" "Of course not," was her reply. So I changed into old jeans and put on my walking shoes. Mama cautioned me to be careful and went on with her chores. The walk was invigorating. Spring had come to the country and everything was getting green. Little Johnny Jump-Ups were springing up all over the pastures. New calves were following their mamas, begging for milk. At the foot of the mountain, I stopped. "Where did Grandpa say that acorn tree was?" "Straight up from the house," I thought I heard him say. I began my journey up the little mountain. It was steeper than I remembered, and I was out of shape. I trudged on, determined to find that tree. Suddenly, the ground leveled out, and I was amazed to see what was before me. Soft green moss covered a small, flat clearing. Dogwood trees, smothered in pastel bloom, surrounded it. Off to the side stood a tall oak tree, Grandpa's acorn tree. Scattered among the tufts of moss were vibrant colors of wildwood violets. Green rock ferns and pearly snowdrops were scattered about us as well. I could hardly catch my breath. I don't know how long I actually stood there. Several minutes, I suppose, but finally I came to my senses and sat down in the moss. In all my childhood wanderings on the mountain, I had never seen this magically beautiful place. Was this what Grandpa meant when he pointed out our special spot on the mountainside all those years ago? Did he know this was here? A squirrel darted in front of me. He had a nut in his mouth. I watched as he scampered up the oak tree. No, I didn't see a wild cow or chickens, but in my heart I knew they were there somewhere. I decided to go tell Mama what I'd found. She would want to see it, too. Before I left, I took one more look. It was the most beautiful place I could ever have imagined. It didn't take me long to get back to the house. I burst into the kitchen, babbling about the clearing on the side of the mountain. Mama calmed me down enough so she could understand what I was talking about. Daddy heard the conversation and tried to convince me there was no such place up there. He knew the mountain and had never seen anything like that. Well, on my insistence, he and Mama decided to go see the amazing place I was raving about, and once again I climbed the mountain straight up from the house. Before I knew it, we were at the top. "We must have missed it," I told my dad. He just nodded, and we retraced our steps. We searched for over an hour for that little place on the mountain. We never found it. I was devastated. On the way back home, Mama put her arms around my shoulders. "Sissy," she said, "you know what you saw, don't you?" "Yeah, I know what I saw, and I know it's there somewhere. We just missed it." "No, sweetie, it's not there anymore. You saw God's garden. Only special people can see that. Your grandpa loved you so much, and he knew you were grieving. Hold that memory in your heart." I'm 52 years old now. Every time I go back to Mama's house and sit on the porch, I remember the secret garden Grandpa told me about, but I no longer go out and look for it. No, I know just where it is. That's called God's Mountain Garden, written by Bertha M. Sutliff, one of the many stories that make up chicken soup for the gardener's soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy. And we'll be talking with you soon.